Hello, and welcome to another edition of the LinuxQuestions.org podcast. First up, LQ updates. First story, the 2005 LinuxQuestions.org Members' Choice Award winners have been announced. That's right, the polls are closed and the results are in. With well over 26,000 votes cast this year, the turnout for this event has just gotten better and better every single year that we've done it. There were a couple of kind of mild surprises this year, but nothing too out of the ordinary or unexpected, I don't think. I was probably most surprised to see that the app that won by the greatest margin was actually Bash in the Shell of the Year award, and it got just under 90% at, let me look it up, 89.67, and that was by far, I think, the largest winner as far as percentage disparity goes. MySQL seems to have pulled ahead a little bit compared to the last couple years with respect to both PostgreSQL and Firebird, which is not necessarily what I would have expected with the year that MySQL has recently between the Oracle and the InnoBase acquisition and a couple other things. I wouldn't have expected them to pull ahead like they did, but they clearly did. Amrock did manage to unseat XMMS as the favorite audio application, despite coming in a fairly distant second last year. And XMMS had won multiple years in a row, so that was probably the biggest champion to get unseated. Finally, I think it's interesting that no single Linux distribution managed to get over 20% of the vote in that category. The winner, which was Ubuntu, came in at 19.49%, and Slackware was right behind it at 19.05%. You then had three others, being Fedora, SUSE, and Debian, at or near about 10%. So it's pretty clear that there is no dominant distro. At least in these, of course, the enterprise distributions in this category, as you would guess kind of from a community standpoint, didn't fare as popular as they probably are in reality. But in the non-enterprise setting, it's clear that there really is no far and away leader as far as popularity with the distros goes. It's spread out among at least five, and from there, even some of the further down ones had a somewhat significant amount of votes. Now, the full results for this will be available for quite some time at www.linuxquestions.org/awards. And actually, every year since we've done these, the results stay available indefinitely, but every year we switch the slash awards to go to the newest one. But if you want to do a search in any particular category, you can go back all 4 years, see how different applications have fared. And a couple of the news sites that picked it up actually did some fairly in-depth analysis on this, which is kind of cool to see. But do keep in mind, and this is another comment kind of aimed at some of the feedback that we've gotten off of non-LQ sites, that these are anecdotal, obviously, and they're only indicative of what the LQ community thinks, and they're no way officially meaningful outside that scope. This isn't any kind of official research that takes into account statistical sampling or any kind of those things. But it is fun, and I think some edge cases aside, that the LQ community in general is really quite indicative of the general Linux community at large. So I do think the votes really do mean something, but do take them for what they're worth. As usual, I voted for a fair number of losers as well as a fair number of winners, and I've been asked who I vote for, and no, I won't tell anyone who I voted for. So congratulations to all the great projects who were nominated and to those of you that won. And if you have won, you should have already gotten both a certificate and a small winner's logo via email. If you're listening to this and are a member of a project that won and you didn't receive that, please do contact me and I'll resend that to you right away. The next LQ story. Interviews with Ronald Lewis has just posted an interview with yours truly. I met Ronald at Scale 4. They had a top of the Radisson party after the first day where all the organizers and a lot of the speakers and some of the attendees went up to just kind of chat. He's just starting out with this, and it was a pleasure to be one of his top first 10 interviews. He's definitely getting a lot of quality names. He also interviewed Mark Spencer, who was a fellow Scale 4X attendee and speaker, so I do wish him the best of luck. And as I did on my blog, I'd like to apologize to Brad for completely and utterly making up his last name, considering that I just submitted a Linux Magazine article about Memcached over the weekend. I have absolutely no idea how I did that. But the good news, Brad, if you do hear this, is that your name is correct in the tech support article. So once again, I apologize. The last Linux question story I have is LQ is LWE Boston bound. It is now official. We will once again be in the .org pavilion in the Linux World Expo in Boston. We just got the word on this, and very excited to be able to once again participate in the Linux World Expo. It's always been fantastic, and I've maintained a good relationship with IDG, and I do appreciate them being able to allow us to once again participate in this. At this point, it looks like it's going to be at least myself and two moderators, being Robin and John. Whether anyone else, other moderators in addition, will join, they're all welcome. We'll see who else is able to go. So I will post more details as soon as I get them, but I just wanted to let everyone know that we will definitely be there. So if you're there, we'll see you there. Now on to the news. The first story I have is IBM Germany leaving Vista for Linux. Now this is a rumor that was based on comments made by Andreas Fleschek at Linux Forum 2006. And here's the quote that this kind of started the rumor. Andreas Fleschek also told that IBM had canceled their contract with Microsoft as of October this year. That means that IBM will not use Windows Vista for their desktops. Beginning from July, IBM employees will begin using IBM Workplace on their new Red Hat-based platform. Not all at once. Some will keep using their present Windows versions for a while, but none will upgrade to Vista. End quote. Now, we've known that IBM has been eyeing Linux on their desktop for some time, so this really isn't a huge surprise, and it's probably only, you know, step one. It's clear that they'll never be able to completely eliminate Vista from their campus, of course. They just, by far, develop too many apps that they'll need to test for deployment on Vista, from Notes and even to Eclipse, and so many apps that they write the client portion of will end up being deployed on Vista. They're not going to eliminate completely here. What they're talking about is on their workers' desktops, not developers, and certainly not test machines. But if you look at what they're doing from a platform perspective, it really is brilliant. What they're doing with Workplace looks extremely powerful. Now, the first part of this is they're turning things like Notes into an Eclipse plugin. And what that means is that Notes will run on any platform that Eclipse runs on. But it gets better than that. With Firefox as its browser and OpenOffice.org as its office suite, the whole package is extremely cross-platform. If you want to run Windows on your desktops and Linux on your servers, fine, they can help you. You can run Linux in both places, they'll help you there too. If you want to run Windows on the desktop now and then later migrate from Windows on the desktop to Linux on the desktop, well, they can help you do that too, selling you migration services, licensing, and support all along the way. They can help you now, they can help you later, and they collect some additional cash all along the way. And IBM really, really seems to fundamentally get not only where the future is heading, but also at the same time understanding the realities of today and be able to exploit that from a business perspective. Andreas also mentioned that they are utilizing the lessons they learned about open source development procedures for their internal proprietary projects, and he especially noted this when it comes to integrating multiple acquired products to get them to work together and to get the developers to work together. They're really using the open source paradigm. And that's just more proof that the open source paradigm really does produce better code and enable developers to do more. And that's just such a common thread that we see that here's a good case. They're not even using it in all cases for open source software. They're using the paradigm internally to develop proprietary projects, and it's still enabling them to benefit. With products like Workplace and applications like Activity Explorer, which looks really cool on the horizon, it's going to be extremely interesting to see where IBM can take Linux on the enterprise desktop, which isn't something we hear a lot about. Next story I have: Dell and Linux on the desktop. And of course, this is back to the more traditional Linux on the desktop, which is the average desktop. There was an interesting interview with Michael Dell posted to desktoplinux.com about the Dell quote-unquote Linux desktop strategy. The fact that he mentions DistroWatch by name means that he's clearly following what's going on in the Linux world, and it's probably not at a detailed level, but at some level, he personally seems to be paying attention to what's going on at Linux. And the way he words things in the interview, it definitely seems like he's kind of sympathetic to the cause. Now, he mentions the failed attempt that Dell made back, and it was about 2000, maybe early 2001, to sell Linux on the desktop. But that was a long time ago, though, and he either fails to understand or doesn't mention that both Linux and the market in general have just changed a ton since 2000. Now, he does make some valid points in the article, but his main gripe seems to be the sheer number of Linux distributions available, and he's going by the DistroWatch number, which means hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And while I do agree that we need to consolidate in some areas if we want mass market acceptance, and this is something I've talked about multiple times, both on my blog and the podcast, I think if we want mass market acceptance, we're probably going to have to make a couple technically poor decisions for the sole sake of gaining that mass acceptance, and I don't know that that's something that we want to see done. It's a very tough question with obviously a lot of pros and cons on both sides, but one thing I think that has been phenomenal about Linux is they've been able to, for the most part, do what's technically correct with no regard to marketing or what's best for companies, and that's why it is such a killer product. In addition to that, though, the reality is that the vast majority of distributions on DistroWatch are very, very niche, from DNA Linux to embedded distributions to Gobo Linux, which completely redoes how the file system does. Probably, and I haven't looked at the stats close, but I would guess over 90% are going to be considered niche. So if he picked, say, two to be on the low end, three might be good, but two could be done. In either way, two or three is less than the number of Windows versions that they support by far. That would allow them to serve a vast majority of the client base that they are targeting. Now, the quote-unquote Linux community is not their target base here, not at all. The Dell potential customer is their target base. And keep in mind here, a large percentage of the Linux community would never buy a Dell anyways. Just not a chance. These are the kind of people that build their own or buy Alienware. You know, these are do-it-yourself people. Just a Dell to them is not appealing. They'll tell their mother to buy a Dell or their brother to buy a Dell, but they're not going to buy a Dell themselves anyways. So you need to understand the target market here. Beyond just that, though, ensuring Dell ran on those two distributions, regardless, let's say they picked, you know, Ubuntu, which seems to be Michael Dell's favorite, and Red Hat. If they ran on both those distributions, that would ensure that the Linux kernel supported Dell hardware, so every distribution in the end would benefit by rolling in new kernel upgrades. That would give the do-it-yourselfers who wanted to run other distributions the ability to still buy a Dell and then put Fedora or Gentoo or Mandriva or whatever they wanted to on it, because the kernel would now work with it. It would also then compel hardware manufacturers to either offer open drivers or at the least release enough specs for the community to do that for them. Now, my guess here is that Dell wants to try to make the Linux community happy while they dip their toe kind of back in the Linux pool, while also not making Microsoft feel threatened at the same time, which is, I think, clearly what happened the first time. On that note, I find it absolutely hilarious that he closes the interview with, quote, "Microsoft has not talked to us about Linux. If they did, I wouldn't care. It's none of their business," end quote. Now, I find it nearly impossible to believe that Linux has never come up in the price negotiations that Dell and Microsoft obviously have over Windows. And we know Dell gets one of the best prices. So for Linux, the topic to never have been breached, I find quite unbelievable. But the fact that he publicly said something like this shows you how much things have changed. Just a few short years ago, he'd not dared say something like that in public, ever, just from the fear of reprisal from Microsoft. So we're clearly continuing to make strides in that area, slowly but surely, and we will get there. The last story I have for you is Novell returns to the SUSE name. It appears that Novell has decided to rename their enterprise desktop line SUSE once again. And according to an announcement that they made at CeBIT, they'll be releasing the next version of their desktop product under the name SUSE Linux Enterprise Desktop, which is kind of similar to RHEL Desktop from a naming convention. And they'll be completely ditching the moniker Novell Linux Desktop. I think this is a good thing. The multiple names they had was creating quite a bit of confusion, even for people that knew what was going on. They had SLES, which was a SUSE Linux Enterprise. They had NLD. They had OpenSUSE. It was just far too much. And people didn't know if Novell Linux was based on SUSE or was it a different product completely and what was the compatibility. And they created far too much confusion for what I can tell was corporate vanity. I'm not sure why they went to the Novell name on the Linux side anyways. This comes right on the heels of Novell last week announcing its financial results for the fiscal quarter that ended January 31st. And they said that the growth of the SUSE Linux and even the other related open source products were not bad. They were decent by their account. But that sales of NetWare and Open Enterprise Server, which is a variant of NetWare that uses Linux kind of as the kernel and then runs as a layered stack on top of that, and which was a product that was announced last year, declined by a much greater percentage than Linux rose. So they're still having some revenue problems, although I saw they have over $1 billion in cash still, so they're still in an okay place for sure. Now they're kind of waiting for, I think, more people to move to Linux, or at least to OES, if not Linux fully, in their NetWare migrations, and it's just happening a little bit slower than they had anticipated. People who love NetWare, and I think some people are just holding on a little bit longer than Novell had hoped for. So best of luck to them. That's all I have for now, but thanks for listening. And remember, if you like the LQ podcast, please head over to podcastalley.com and vote for us. Thanks.